ready to keep you company wherever you are. Carte Blanche, the podcast, brings you immersive, hard-hitting stories anytime, anywhere, every week.
Welcome to another jam-packed episode of The Whole Week Wrap with Daily Maverick and Carte Blanche. Helping us make sense of the latest headlines is Daily Maverick Managing Editor, Janet Hurd. Here's what's coming your way. All is not well with Neisner, and a 109-page report tries to explain why. You've heard of state capture, but are we entering an era of media capture?
The media has a huge role to play in actually just protecting itself for the public interest from abuses and attempts to buy and control media.
Then the High Court says no to anti-vaxxers. And how one mining giant is playing its part in reviving Mpumalanga's rivers. But first, the country has been gripped by the heartbreaking case of young Jocelyn Smith. Following arrests last week, we look at the state's case and how online sleuths perhaps took things too far. Good morning, Janet, and welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good morning, Lizanne. It's good to be here.
So it's been 3 weeks to the day that six-year-old Jocelyn Smith has been missing. And honestly, this case has just become darker by the day.
Yes, Lizanne. I mean, this is the saddest story on every level, really, isn't it? We have this community searching for a little six-year-old kid. Because of the social media involvement, it seemed the country was seized by the disappearance of this little girl. And it was like a frenzy of disinformation and weird reporting. And it kind of just whipped itself up into this real mystery, chaotic case. There seemed to be a lot of confusion around the policing and who was in charge. The investigations called on and off. You know, the rumors surfacing around the mother. And you start thinking, what do you believe? The whole story was so puzzling. When I saw the photo of the mother appearing in court after all the frenzy, trying to find out what happened, to see that mother in court with three other co-accused, including her boyfriend, for kidnapping and trafficking of her child. I could almost not believe that was happening. You know, I know a lot of the journalists were out there at Frydenberg for the court case, and our reporter, Vincent Kreyerwagen, was there as well, and he'd been in the community the day before. And it was just devastating to see this image of these four accused in court. And the saddest thing of all is that we have not found Jocelyn. She is, at this point, still not actually, the search continues.
Just for those not in the know, young Jocelyn went missing on Monday, the 19th of Feb in Saldanha. The suspects made their appearance in court last week on trafficking of persons for the purpose of exploitation charges, as well as kidnapping. And the state believes that Jocelyn was sold to Sangoma for Muti for 20,000 rand. And as the story developed and as we became more aware of some of the facts that the state says it has, I feel as though, you know, a real darkness entered the lives of many South Africans who are following this story. And I think that is in part why there's been this, as you've mentioned, this social media kind of frenzy around the case, because people are trying to find answers. We've, of course, seen some really questionable, I don't know if we can call it reporting, but especially that video in which the mother was interviewed on TikTok, which was quite strange to see unfold. It's such a bizarre, dark case, and I think we're in for a lot more. In February this year, Carte Blanche visited Neisner, a municipality teetering on the edge of collapse. While there, we discovered a once beautiful tourist destination drowning in sewage and waste. Now, the Western Cape released a report detailing what went wrong. But will it be enough to save the ecologically sensitive region? Last week, the Neisner municipality released a lengthy 109-page report detailing how this vital ecological region, often referred to as the gem of the Western Cape, became a waste-covered, sewage-spilling mess. My question is, do you think the Neisner municipality will actually act on some of the recommendations in this report?
The report, you know, as you said, is a 109-page diagnostic report produced by the Western Cape local government. unpacking how and where the municipality has failed. Carte Blanche has done, I was looking at the video that Erin Bates, she flies over the region to show the sewage spills, really. It is quite devastating. And our reporter, Sinead Payne, has been covering it painstakingly as well. The jewel in the garden route. And then you suddenly see this complete, almost, and it seems so sudden, like a sudden complete collapse. Currently, it's an ANC-led coalition with the Patriotic Alliance and the Plaaslike Besorgde Inwoners. So it is one of those coalition governments, which we can't ignore the fact that, you know, when we're looking at the effectiveness of coalitions, one can't ignore the fact that this is a coalition. It's obviously an alliance of different parties, and it does make you wonder how stable we can be in coalitions in South Africa when this is an example where things are not doing well at all. According to the report, there was a breakdown in communication. There's huge staff vacancies in key areas. I think it's about 56% staff vacancy. In infrastructure, the services directorate, I mean, that is exactly where you need so much competency and so much investment. And as you said, what will happen, what will come out of this? Well, we're going to have to see if they can actually somehow, you know, because recommendations are one thing, but what will actually take it to shift? And at least there is a recognition now, and there is this report out from, you know, obviously intervention from a provincial government into a local council. It's not going to be a quick fix by any means. Mm.
And, you know, having spoken to the mayor himself of Knysna as well, we have that full interview up on our website as well. During that interview, Erin really pressed him for answers and to take accountability for some of the failings in the municipality. And he just was adamant there, working hard to fix the few issues that they deemed to be problematic. But I think, as you've also rightfully said, is the whole matter of coalitions is the big problem here. The infighting there is just monumental, really, because if you listen to the recordings that came out of the first council meetings in January, it's just in chaos. So there's so much fixing that needs to be done. And I really, really hope that the Knysna municipality takes this report on and they actually take it seriously and try to fix things.
Yes, absolutely. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on the municipality and a lot of pressure to make appointments.
Yes, definitely.
And let's hope this report does lead to some action, because it's actually beyond urgent, isn't it?
Globally, the threat against free press is intensifying as various organizations try to sway public opinion through mis- and disinformation. Whether it's infiltrating once respected publications or guiding journalists down a path of half-truths and wild claims, separating fact from falsity is proving more tricky by the day. But several journalists and media experts are working tirelessly to ensure the media remains uncaptured. So the next one I want to get into is one that you said you're very passionate about. And you recently served on SANEF's Code for Africa panel on the state of media capture. And in particular, you looked at misinformation, fake media such as deepfakes, and how this could potentially impact this year's elections. Tell us a bit more about this panel, some of the discussions that took place. It sounds really, really interesting.
It was a panel that's convened in Cape Town. It was a tie-up with Code for Africa, which does a lot of work in Africa using digital tools and investigative operations to really boost quality journalism on the continent. Code for Africa has released a couple of reports on the capture of media in various parts of Africa and how media is captured. And it's just fascinating about, you know, it's political people and businesses, how they inveigle their way into media, and especially vulnerable media. It obviously impacted on South Africa. The reports focused a lot on the Russia and China control or inroads into the media in Africa. Of course, we know that capture takes many forms. There's attempts by all powerful countries, including the US, obviously, to influence media. That's what governments do. The overarching points for take-homes for me was how important it is to maintain the integrity of media institutions, to protect them and to provide mechanisms to prevent the capture of media. And it's quite simple things. The media has a huge role to play in actually just protecting itself for the public interest from abuses and attempts to buy and control media. This could be through training. It could be through sponsorship of various projects. It could be, you know, inviting people. There's a lot of trips that journalists go on. For me, it was, you know, a reminder of the need for disclosure for everything. And it's so easy to slip your guard if a journalist goes on a trip to the Ukraine, for instance. There should be disclosure at the bottom of the article that they were funded by the Ukraine government or whoever it is. It doesn't matter from where it comes. If it's from Ukraine or from Russia or from China or from the US, disclosure is the key here. Then the readers know, okay, this is a sponsored trip. It really was, for me, just a reminder of the need to be clear on policies. And a lot of it centered around, you know, disinformation, and AI is a massive factor, which we can talk about separately, but it does link into the need to just disclose. I think for me, the overriding thing is disclose. If there is something, just disclose and be transparent. Don't pretend that something is when it isn't. And there are quite a lot of tools that can be used to protect media from the powerful, the rich and powerful. That's really where it often comes from. People are trying to influence the agenda and the tone of media.
I want to also get into a more local example of media capture, so to speak, and how some publications have been outright weaponized in recent months. I mean, we've seen how Ipsos Surveys publications targeted journalist Karen Morn in ways I don't even want to repeat. I don't really want to bring more attention to it, because the claims that were made and the disgusting opinion pieces that were written, they don't deserve more oxygen. But what were some of the key takeaways at Code for Africa discussions on specifically media capture in South Africa?
A lot of the conversation was around attacks on journalists who are investigative journalists or legal journalists, like Karen Morn. The discussion that was quite big, and it was raised in a column that Chris Roper writes in Daily Maverick from Code for Africa, who he was on the panel, a young journalism student in the audience, basically asked for advice on how, when she started working as a journalist, she could deal with threats of sexual violence and other attacks on social media. The reality is that it's so prevalent now that it's part of the job. You have to actually be aware when you're going into places where people don't want you to go, you are going to be under attack, and it often will be disinformation. It will be through other media that could be captured. And the particular incident is, as you said, it was the Karen Morn incident where somebody wrote a piece basically likening her to some Nazi film propagandist. And it follows a pattern. It was written by somebody called Edmund Perry, and now there's an investigation underway of whether this Edmund Perry is in fact even a real person, because this is what happens with disinformation. And, you know, there was the Jamie Ross outing of another so-called journalist who was writing in the Independent publications about people who have been uncovering abuses within Independent. And Jamie Ross went on the attack. And it turned out that this Jamie Ross, in fact, is not a real person. And that's why we are dealing with such a tricky situation where it's quite easy to put on covers and it's quite hard to get to who is actually authentic. And so it's important for the media to just always, like, say we get a lot of external contributions from people. Yeah. People writing into Daily Maverick saying, please, here's my opinion, please publish it. It can take hours to vet one person if you don't know them, because they come out of the blue, they've got an opinion, might sound like an authentic opinion and you want to publish it and they seem like an authentic person. But honestly, it is actually at the point, as we've seen many times, that the person could actually be a front for somebody else, could be a researcher for some institution or some politician. And it can take ages to vet one article. And Mavericus has a live policy that is constantly updated to take into account the fact that we could be played. We've got fake videos, you know, videos that can be faked. Everything can be faked. So the job of media is so important now, to just find those safeguards to protect from abuses and from fakery. So it puts the onus a lot more, it's harder and it takes a long time.
In January 2023, three non-profit organizations filed a court application to stop South Africa's COVID-19 vaccination campaign until a full investigation by independent experts was done. According to the COVID Care Alliance, Transformative Health Justice, and Free the Child, Save the Nation, the vaccines posed a serious health risk to the public. But the High Court disagrees. So, speaking of misinformation and disinformation, this is a case that's been dragging on for a long time, and it's the COVID-19 vaccine court case. A collective of three organizations brought an application to stop all COVID vaccinations. They cited that, quote, it resulted in strange and unusual medical conditions, end quote, which were experienced by some people who received the vaccine. Now, the High Court obviously said, no, we can't just halt vaccinations, because that would mean those who do want to get vaccinated will then not have access to the vaccine. So in other words, you know, you would be robbing people of their right and their freedom to choose. And I think that is what the anti-vax organizations maybe missed. Wanting your choice to not take the vaccine, it's equal to other people who do want the vaccine, and you need to respect that.
I support the ruling by Judge Norman Davis. I'm glad he dismissed the application with costs. It's quite weird because COVID is not at the forefront of our discourse anymore, although we know that it's there. It was a reminder for me that people still have these strong opinions and strong beliefs in trying to, you know, to trash the vaccination program. You know, just last week I caught up with a former colleague who I hadn't seen for many years. You know, one of the first things somehow came up in conversation, she lost her partner and her father within 3 months in 2022 due to COVID. And when I hear things like that again, I think, gosh, you know, how can you doubt the science? Those are two people that my colleague friend lost during COVID, as so many people did. And that's when they were over. I'm starting to, you know, get chilled when I think about the terrible loss of life during that time. For me, I'm just saying, follow the science and let's be sensible about it. Sure, there might have been some side effects, and no one must dispute that. No one, I mean, I'm not saying that there should be no discussion around it, but golly, follow the science.
Even during the court case, in its filing, the SA Health Products Regulatory Authority, or SAHPRA, also said, you know, we don't deny the fact that there are possible side effects. And then they said paracetamol has side effects. They don't deny that. Yeah. But then they also brought forth these really strong figures to back up their claim, saying that, you know, between May 2021 and November 2022, about 37.5 million vaccines had been administered in South Africa. And of those, only 232 deaths, of which only two turned out to be, as they say, causally linked to the vaccine. Yes. So the science is there. The studies are there.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if you think of the greater good, what the vaccine did during COVID was incredible. One can only imagine what would have happened if there wasn't the COVID vaccine. You know, I mean, it's too horrifying to think. And the doubters, sure, we must be skeptical. I'm not saying we mustn't have a debate about it. It's not to throw the baby out of the bathwater. Frankly, I just find it quite tiring.
When toxic acid mine drainage turned the Vilger River and Kumati Poort Spruit a luminous green back in 2022, environmentalists sounded the alarm. The spill resulted in what some called the biggest fish die-off in a decade, and farmers and communities relying on this vital water source were left helpless. But things have finally taken a more positive turn as mining giant Thungela and community members work together to revive some of Mpumalanga's most devastated rivers. So some good news for our rivers as mining giant Thungela stepped in to fix what it had broken, or what was broken by the mining industry. Following severe acid mine drainage into some of Mpumalanga's most ecologically sensitive water systems, they invested a fair amount into rehabilitating up to 112 kilometers of the region's rivers and streams. You know, it's very rare that you see the big mining companies come forward and say, you know what, we'll put money into this, we'll fix it, we'll help rehabilitate the area. So I was very happy to see this. I know Daily Maverick had a wonderful feature on this and the highly anticipated release of these tiny little fish into the Kranspoort River. Can you tell us a bit more about this encouraging initiative?
So, I mean, it's not often that a mining company is seen to be doing something positive for the environment, but we must never forget that they're actually the source and the cause. But I do think credit here seems to be due to them. A lot of mining companies don't take accountability and they just try and blame the Zamazamas, the illegal miners. And this is the case where this has been fueled by that. But I suppose we need to say to Thungela, you know, well done for actually taking the step to actually try and rehabilitate, you know, the Mpumalanga rivers. These rivers were fouled by a toxic discharge of acid mine water, you know, which is triggered by illegal mining at a disused operation. And this was in the report that Ed Stoddart did for Daily Maverick on the rehabilitation project with the fish. But so much needs to be done. And it was so heartbreaking to see, I know Carte Blanche also covered the story and interviewed farmers who'd been impacted. So it affects the rivers, it affects farms, it affects food, it affects everything in those communities. And there were reports that it would take 10 years to recover from this mishap. So it's good to see a mine company, which are generally not the most accountable, actually saying, well, we will help to clean up the rivers affected by this acid mine drainage. For me, I just hope that other mining companies also start looking at ways that they could be accountable, because there's a lot of pollution from mining. As pointed out by Ed Stoddart in his article, he said a glaring example is the collapse of the Makgali City sewage treatment facility that has devastated the Blaupang Spruit, which runs through the cradle of humankind, which is a World Heritage Site. So let's hope that the restoration, which will take a long time, but hopefully this can catch on in terms of a mining company that even if when they stop to use a mine, they're still accountable.
I really hope to see much more of this in future, you know, where people just join hands and ultimately save the country, really, if to put it in a very kind of exaggerated form. But really, that's what it comes down to, because I think the power is now in our hands and in the private sector's hands, really, because, I mean, the stories that we've covered today just show that government is really not, they don't seem very interested in getting involved.
And I do think South Africans are remarkable. I think what always gives me so much hope is that there is so much good and there are communities doing so much. There's a lot to be positive about despite our challenges. And even in the terrible story about Jocelyn Smith in Saldanha, to see the community so engaged, galvanized together to try and find this kid, it's like one of their kids. It's their loss. You really do get that sense of community, which is quite amazing, because there's a lot of pain. And yet when people come together, it can help.
Let's get out there and do some work. But on that note, thank you so much, Janet. This has been a really, really lovely chat today. I hope you have a lovely week further.
Thanks very much, Nazan. You too.
And that's a wrap. Join us again next week as we unpack more local and international headlines. Until then, give Carte Blanche and Daily Maverick a like and follow on socials.